I have some really exciting news for listeners of the Lifestyle Investor podcast. Most people think lifestyle investing is about making more money or creating additional passive income streams. And while that is part of it, the most savvy lifestyle investors understand that having a solid tax strategy is fundamental and really foundational to creating wealth. I firmly believe that having the right tax strategy is the single best investment that you can make. I know tax strategy isn't the sexiest topic, but once you understand a few key elements to the IRS playbook, the compounding benefit you receive year after year is enormously significant. In fact, we have members inside the Lifestyle Investor Mastermind who have used these strategies and have saved hundreds of thousands of dollars, and in some cases, millions of dollars. This is not a nice to have if you're interested in growing your wealth. This is a must. In our brand new Tax Strategy Masterclass, I have hand-selected and shared the details of the 28 most valuable strategies to help you increase your tax savings this year and for years to come. Plus, if you want to hire a top-tier tax strategist, it can easily set you back tens of thousands of dollars, if not more. And you want to make sure that you have the best, most accurate information to ensure that you're hiring the right person for you. That's why we included a whole section with advice, resources, and multiple interviews with my personal tax specialists to help you build a bulletproof tax team, but for a fraction of the cost. The entire Tax Strategy Masterclass was designed for people like you who want to keep more of their hard-earned money without having to sift through the complicated tax code. If you're interested, head over to lifestyleinvestor.com/tax to learn more about the course or set up a free consultation call with our team at lifestyleinvestor.com/consultation. Again, that's lifestyleinvestor.com/tax. This episode is a little different than our usual format. Every once in a while, I plan to share a bonus interview with one of our Lifestyle Investor Mastermind members. While we limit the number of people who can join the Lifestyle Investor Mastermind each year, this is your opportunity to get a peek behind the curtain and discover what the smartest investors and entrepreneurs are doing to 10x their wealth and freedom. Let's get into it. Today, I'm speaking with Nick Najjar, an investor, entrepreneur, and CEO of ACS Communities and Elephant Capital Partners. His company manages 5 mobile home parks with over 270 lots across Missouri and Illinois. They specialize in securing excellent deals for clients while streamlining the process, saving them significant time and effort. In today's conversation, Nick shares the tax-free strategies he used to secure his first mobile home park acquisition and how that set the stage for a series of successful ventures, allowing him to create multiple streams of passive income. He also shares some of his lessons learned through direct mobile home park ownership, along with his top tips for those looking to invest in this sector. Plus, Nick also discusses the transformative experience of being a member of the Lifestyle Investor Mastermind and how it reshaped his thinking around investing and passive income strategies. In this episode, you'll learn Nick's preferred tax-free bank replacement strategies for freeing up wealth and generating massive multiple income streams. You'll learn the benefits of seller financing over traditional lending options with fluctuating rates and short-term debt, and the strategic advantage of assignments for both novice and seasoned real estate investors and how they help investors take advantage of market fluctuations. One more thing before we get to today's interview. I talked with Nick to see if there was anything he could offer up to our lifestyle investor community, and Nick's agreed to share his mobile home park overview capture spreadsheet, which simplifies the process of evaluating a mobile home park deal. Not only that, but Nick's team has also offered up a courtesy deal review. So once you've filled out the spreadsheet with the details of your deal, you have the option to get in touch with Nick and do a more thorough assessment of the property. To get access to today's show notes, including the best clips, transcripts, and links to all the resources mentioned above, visit lifestyleinvestor.com/184. Thanks for listening, and without further delay, my conversation with Nick Najjar. What's up, Nick? So good to have you on the show.
Happy to be here.
Well, this has been a long time coming. You and I have been friends for almost 2 decades, or maybe right at 2 decades. And I think it'll be fun to talk about kind of where we were in life when we first started and first became friends, first met each other, and kind of where we are in our lives today, because we started from a similar place and we also have ended in a similar place, or at least currently where we are today is very similar.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So what was the impetus for you to get into business, or I guess sales or entrepreneurship? I mean, I guess we both worked at Cutco and, you know, that was a way that you paid for school, but I'd love to hear that story.
Sure. Yeah. So I was a sophomore in college, sleeping till noon every day. And my dad basically said, if you want to live in our house, you need to get a job. And I somehow found the Cutco interview and went to that and got hired and had pretty good success with that, you know, hit the field sales manager ranks, which is like the highest like level of commissions you can make within a few weeks. And then kept doing that. And then, you know, I'd known of you cause you were kind of famous. It broke all the records in Cutco, or were breaking the records at the time that I just had got into the business or shortly after. And then I remember, I guess it was my senior year of college, you had got promoted from Chicago and you moved down to St. Louis. And that's where we had gotten a lot closer and got to know each other and all that. So just kind of funny how the world works like that.
Oh, it is. It's such a blast. And living in the same city, we got to know each other well. I knew you as a single guy. You knew me as a single guy. We got to watch each other as we found the one, got married, had kids, you know, just really, you know, growing the family and still doing family trips together. So it's just been such a blast to see where you were, where you are, how we're doing it together. So it's so much fun. Now, did you know at some point that you were going to be an entrepreneur based on maybe the fact that your dad was an entrepreneur and had his own business?
Yeah, probably. I always kind of had that entrepreneurial mindset, I think. So, you know, I was like bussing tables and pizza delivery driver, but I kind of just had it in me in a way. And I worked in my dad's business a little bit as well prior to that. So I think there was something in me there for sure.
I think your dad had like a couple mechanic shops, or at least one mechanic shop, auto, right?
It started when I was younger, it was gas stations. And then he had over time transitioned to just auto repair. So he kind of sold his last gas station and then had 5 auto repair shops in the St. Louis area. And he's been retired for probably 6 or 7 years now, but yeah.
Well, he hasn't been retired from the pickleball court from what I hear. So that's fun. I hope he's listening to this and really enjoying himself. I just have such admiration and appreciation for both your parents, getting to know them over the years. It's fun seeing the lineage of entrepreneurship. And I think working in the business, you can gain some appreciation for the hard work, the grit, the grind. But I think you also can pick up like, hey, maybe if I were doing it, I would do things a little bit differently. And I'm curious if you saw some of that and how that played into you starting your first business.
Hard to say. You know, I remember when I was younger, he would leave before I woke up and got home really late and really worked the long hours. His gas station was probably about 45 minutes to an hour from our house. So he had a long commute every day, and I saw that. But as he kept building his business, I saw him scaling back more and more. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure that had made an imprint on me over time. Very lucky to have that mentor like that.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's a great teacher. And so is your mom. And so, yeah, just super cool to see that. And you decided to kind of go a different path. So instead of taking over the family business, or instead of, and by the way, one of my last guests that I just had on, it's great, Brian Beers, owns a whole bunch of, I think it was like 30 or 40 different Midas locations and has done very well in that space. But it seems like you kind of found a different path. And I'd love for you to talk about it, because it's the path I found. And I had a lot of fun as we worked together and as you picked my brain about getting into mobile home park investing.
So yeah, it was started with Cutco. And then, you know, I guess about 6-7 years ago, I made a little pivot and we launched the Real Producers magazine. So we host events and produce a monthly publication for the top real estate agents in certain markets. And then about that same time, I bought my first mobile home park. So I think that was like 5 years ago now, almost 6. And, you know, it was a little bit of a slower start because I was starting a business and then I bought the park. So I was doing kind of both. But then once I decided that I don't love the business, but I like it enough. And I see a lot of paths of really like creating wealth. You know, you can go out and you can work a job or you can go out and buy a property and double, triple. I was looking at, we bought a park for my third park for $450,000 on a seller finance note. And we've added a lot of value since. I think there were 20 occupied. There's now 39 occupied, raised rents and just done all the things that you would want to do. And just, it's been cool to see what we've created and built in terms of equity and value for, ironically, my dad and I, he's my partner in that deal, which has been fun too. But yeah, that's kind of been the path, is getting my first park and getting a couple more. So,
and what was it like just having that single park before you bought anything else? Like what was the cash flow like and what did you improve it to? I mean, it sounds like you probably doubled up.
There wasn't a whole lot there. I mean, it was a heavy value add type of project. I think when we bought it, there was, well, we thought there was 25 occupied. There was only 20 though. We ended up moving in 4 homes over a couple years. You submetered and billed back the water. We raised the rents about 2 years ago. Or no, I guess it was last year. Just a little, not a little less than a year. Back in the day when rates were at 3.5%, you know, we ended up refinancing that. So I was able to, that park hasn't really been a cash flow generator, at least the first few years. But we were able to get back all of our initial capital that we put in at that refinance. And now it is actually cash flowing fairly well for, you know, a smaller park. So yeah, did that answer your question?
Yeah. And then, so what did you do with that cash? You got that cash back, I think, used that to buy another park, right?
There was 3 partners in the deal and we were all had like, you know, a third of the money in. And I borrowed money from a whole life insurance policy, something I know you talk about a lot. So I ended up paying back that policy. And if I had to think about it, yeah, I had since invested in something. It was kind of been a cool journey because I had just had the mobile home parks and the magazine stuff. But then since I joined your group, kind of shifted my mindset a bit around getting additional streams of passive income coming. Really, I've been much more aggressive on trying to hit my monthly cash flow number, made some private investments. I ended up selling one of our parks and I'm seller financing that now. So that's yielding me about $2,400 a month in basically income because that all the money that we've invested has been paid back since. So yeah, it's been cool to kind of recycle the cash over time.
Oh, I love it.
Do you love the podcast and the book and wonder what the next step should be on your lifestyle investor journey? For a limited time, my team is doing free personalized consultation calls to learn more about your goals and determine which of our courses or masterminds will help you get to the next level. Whether that's to make your first investment or to create your first income stream of passive income, or whether that's to achieve ultimate financial freedom. If you'd like to reserve a spot, head over to lifestyleinvestor.com/consultation to book a free strategy session while they're still available. Again, that's lifestyleinvestor.com/consultation.
Well, I always have fun interviewing friends. It's really fun when they're also members of the Lifestyle Investor Mastermind. So we'll definitely talk about that. But I just want to talk a little bit more about your story because I think there's some more layers to it. And one of the cool things that you just mentioned was utilizing whole life insurance as kind of like a bank. It's your own personal bank, a bank replacement strategy. And for those of you that want to learn more about this, I've been doing this for about 20 years now. And you can check out the episode I did with Will Duffy. Go ahead and look that up. It is a fantastic, that guy's a wealth of knowledge in this space. And I think crafts some of the best policies out there of anyone. But talk about your experience with whole life and kind of where it leads you today. A lot of people have heard from the who's who that maybe are on the debt side of things. They're trying to help people get out of debt and saying, hey, whole life isn't the best investment, but you talk to any wealthy person or most wealthy people, and it is most certainly a component of their portfolio.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at all the big banks and corporations too, you look at how much life insurance these big banks have. I mean, it's almost like, well, if they're doing it, why not? But so my journey was interesting. So my remember my first real introduction to the whole life concept. I was fairly successful in Cutco. I was probably 20, 21 years old. I met a Northwestern Mutual representative, and she had basically pitched me this deal. And then I brought it back to an Edward Jones advisor, who was my advisor at the time. And he's like, that's a bad idea. And my dad was very against it too. And I just kind of let it go. I'm like, no, I'll just kind of stay the course. I let those influences that say this is not a good thing do it. But then I just kept getting these signs. And I remember I had asked you, I was like, hey, where should I be investing my money? I'm only doing this like Roth IRA right now. And he's like, you got to meet Russ. And I met this gentleman, Russ, that you and I worked with for a while. And he educated me to the point where I understood it and probably could explain it in a better way than the Edward Jones guy understood it in his example. So just kind of built my confidence up. But even after I met him, I didn't pull the trigger right away. It was still a couple more years because of all the negative influences. Is like, you know, they're overloaded with fees and it's a lot of money. But I knew that being able to utilize that money in two different ways and have it be liquid and being able to and have full control over that was just the path that I wanted to take. So started building that up. And yeah, it was really cool to be able to, you know, buy my first real estate property with that component to it. So.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I can't even imagine investing the way that I have if I didn't have it, because I've done over 50 deals borrowing against that policy. It's just been incredible. So to have a bank replacement strategy that you can use to fund anything that you do and to get two returns with the same dollars is just incredible. So you can have fees and commissions that come out, but when your dollars earn you two returns in two different places, it's bound to, over time, more than compensate for that. Not to mention that it has tax-free growth, tax-free distribution, and tax-free death benefit. So not many things out there, not many vehicles that have all three of those.
And protection from creditors.
That's right. So you use that to help buy some real estate. You ended up buying some parks. You sold some parks. I think you even have one listed right now, if memory serves me correctly. And you started another business that I think is brilliant. And I was hoping someone would do this. We had a good friend who I probably should have on the show, Stathi Edel, who this guy just loves due diligence and details and geeks out on it. And I remember just being like, man, I need someone that loves that and wants to do that. Like, I hope you start a company and you just do this, because that would be really cool. And of course, in time, he realized, yeah, he'd be really good at it. And of course, I hired him for every deal I've ever done since he started his company called Due Diligence Partners. So nice shout out to him. But same for you. Is I love the idea of someone that is finding deals, putting them under contract, and then sells the assignment. I've paid a lot of assignment fees over the years, and they're some of the happiest dollars that I ever spend, because I know what I'm getting. And it's taking a lot of the work out of it, which is just finding the deal. So I'd love to have you talk about your new company, your new acquisition company and assignment company, and even maybe elaborate more on what an assignment is.
It's funny, there are two thoughts coming to mind. One, we're actually doing our fifth deal coming up here, Justin. I had kind of done the math the other day on like how much money Justin's made and how much he's paid in fees. And it's been a fair deal. I'm like, man, we should have asked for more. I'm like, I should just ask for like 2% equity in all these deals, you know. So, but it's been a pleasure working with you for sure. We've had some, well, one, most of the deals have been fairly smooth, except for the one that you're still kind of dealing with. So, but anyway, so the way it started, I was on the hunt for deals of my own, and I ended up getting a property under contract about 30 minutes from the property that I own up in Indiana. And I got under contract, but when I went to visit it, I was like, oh, I might be in over my head. It was one of those deals. I don't remember the exact numbers. This was probably like 4 years ago now, but we were under contract for like $2 million. This is a big park, under contract for like $2 million. But when it was all said and done, it needed about $2 million of capital improvements. I drove it and there was a bunch of people sitting out in the middle of a random Wednesday. I probably spotted 15 pit bulls, and you just kind of tell that something was just a little off with this park, and it was just going to be a lot of work. Give you an idea, as I was driving and I was leaving, I had three guys jump in a car, and they were following me with a GoPro camera chasing me. And I literally is like, okay, I'm just going to pull over and be like, hey guys, what's going on? Like, what are you doing? Who are you here with? I'm like, guys, I'm just with a survey company. I'm just there. Do you have a business card? And I'm like, oh no, I don't have any with me. I'm like, it's no big deal. No harm, no foul. Just checking out the property, you know, nobody's in trouble. And, you know, usually we say we're either with a survey company or insurance company. We're on site because most owners don't want people to know that who's on site. So that was funny. But anyway, we got that under contract. I just realized I was in over my head. I was in Frank Ross Mobile Home University. So I always encourage people that are looking at parks, thinking about parks, anything, go to Mobile Home University, check out one of those boot camps. It will save you a ton of time, effort, energy. Whether you buy or don't buy parks, like, you know, it will help you get clarity. I've had friends that have gone through that and have been like, our mutual friend Jimmy, Justin's like, yeah, I don't want to do this. He went through the boot camp, his sister was with him. He calls me on the Tuesday after he'd gone through that. He's like, I don't want to do it. Most people are like, yeah, I like this, and they end up doing it. But anyway, we had the property under contract, then we assigned the contract. A lot of people are probably familiar with single family homes. Wholesaling, I would say, is fairly common. Where basically you get the property under contract, but you're not the end buyer. You will assign that contract to the end buyer. So for simplicity, we have a park under contract. We assign that park to Justin. Justin ends up taking over all the rights to that contract. He usually will pay a fee for that, and then he ends up closing the deal. So that's kind of how we do it. The owners of mobile home parks are typically underserved, especially with smaller parks. So most brokers are only doing deals that are like $1 million and up. So we kind of found a sweet spot for some of these smaller parks. Nobody will help them, even if they want to sell. So we'll work with them and help them find a buyer. And that's essentially what we do. So done a handful of those deals since about a little over 2 years ago now. I had called a friend of mine, Jason, who I basically said, hey man, I remember texting him. He was either in between jobs or I can't remember exactly where he was at, but I texted him like, hey, there's an opportunity here. I think we should do this together. And he's like, I'll start tomorrow. So literally over text. I'm like, well, let's slow down a little bit. We had a handful of conversations, but since he kind of runs point on all of those deals, typically we'll have anywhere from 7 to 10 parks under contract, you know, available for assignment. So yeah, it's fun.
Big time shout out to Jason Ramshaw, who is just great operationally and great at details and just locks these parks up under contract, does a great job. The volume is there. I am just constantly impressed with how many parks you guys are getting under contract and how many assignment fees you're doing. So nice work with that. And especially for people like me that don't really have the time or have the desire to do the hunting that we once did early on in our careers, you've got a business now that supports you guys buying the ones that you want, and the ones you don't want, you can just sell the assignment. It's brilliant. I'd love to talk a little bit about your experience being part of the Lifestyle Investor Mastermind. What's that been like for you? And in terms of education, in terms of network, in terms of tax strategy, or anything else?
You know, I still remember when you had first launched it, when it was like, it was just a group that was like free for your friends and family kind of thing. And eventually you decided to turn into something, which is great. You know, I think once the book came out, and I just love, Justin, the value that you've added to the world. I mean, it's just amazing. Blows my mind, quite frankly. But when I had, you know, end up saying, hey, this is a path I want to take, I had joined. And, you know, for me, there's been a handful of things. I think one, just the proverbial, like, iron sharpens iron, right? Like, I am constantly surrounding myself with the people that I want to be. Like, that whole lifestyle investor mindset, there's so much to that. I think all of us have this, like, path of knowing where we want to be. We had a little meetup that I've enjoyed hosting, and we did that last week. And there's two guys there that were like, they have W-2 jobs, very high paying W-2 jobs. And it's hard when you're, you know, making 500 grand, 600 grand a year to give up that income and be an investor, right? So, but everybody there, whether they have a job or they don't, they all have that mindset of creating cash flow, creating passive income, and not just being an investor, but really having lifestyle, spending time with family, and not sacrificing things that a lot of people sacrifice. So that whole mindset shift has been great. A lot of tax strategy. I remember I told my CPA, I'm like, I don't want any active income anymore. I think I've removed myself enough from my businesses to say, I'm just going to say my businesses that I have, it's a passive venture at this point. So that's been a good in terms of tax savings. the deals are incredible. Every deal, I think most people would say like they wish they could invest in every deal, but you can't, unless you are Justin, it's hard to invest in every deal because a lot of really good deals out there. But that's been fun. The events, I mean, all of it, man, it's just the top notch. I remember it was ranked as one of the top five mastermind communities in the world. I mean, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
Well, it's an honor to have you part of it. I mean, it's really special for me seeing my friends getting to experience all the cool stuff, the world-class speakers, best in class in whatever their expertise is, you know, so kind of advisors, but then the members that they just want to give of their gifts. And then everyone's hungry to learn and get better. And then something really cool about you is you showed up and said, hey, I want to add value. You know, you said you're certified in facilitating groups because you went through John Berghoff's, you know, certification program. Can't remember what it's rebranded to, if it's LEAF or Flourishing Leadership Institute or whatever it's called. You can correct me on that one, but you have skills to, you know, kind of run some functions, and you've run several amazing meetups for the community, you know, with 15 to 30 people over the course of this year. And so that's been really neat. And I'm curious what the experience has been like for you being a facilitator.
I enjoy it. When I was working, you know, more in my publishing business and the Cutco business, I was speaking a lot, like a few times a week, literally 2-3 times a week, small presentations to real estate agents, business owners, whatever. I was involved with the local mastermind. So that really fills my bucket, getting out there and getting in front of people. But I just kind of, basically when COVID happened, I'd stopped and I haven't really gone back, nor do I really want to at this point. But when I had joined, I was like, hey, let's do a meetup in St. Louis. And you know, let's utilize these things I've learned. I didn't actually go through the full formal process, but I had sat through enough meetings because he had trained the Cutco people. He had trained the Real Producers people, Front Row Dad. Like, I've been part of 3 or 4 organizations that I've directly seen and been in these meetings. I'm like, okay, this is a way to run a meeting and to do what we call crowdsource the collective wisdom of the audience. Like, you don't need a speaker. We all will learn from each other. And there's a method of how to facilitate that. And that's been really fun. So we did one in St. Louis. And then I remember, like, Justin, like, we should do more of them this year. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So we, you know, did a handful, and it's been great. I don't know what else to say. So,
well, props to you, because you really kind of led that movement where, you know, we, at that time, we were doing all kinds of events via Zoom. And we did our big annual retreat, and you said, hey, I think members would get even more value if we just did some regular meetups. And so we did that. We tested it out. And then you were right. We asked the group, we said, is this a value add that you would like? And people, like, I mean, the feedback we got was incredible. And so we actually decided that we would do some quarterly meetings, and then people volunteered to host some on their own. And so this year we're going to end up hosting somewhere between 10 and 11 meetups across the year. And I think we're probably moving to a point where we're going to have a monthly meetup in 2024, which is just fantastic. And people, the feedback's been incredible. And when you have high performing people that have been very successful at whatever their niche, whatever their industry is, and you just ask for them to share what their biggest expertise is and the biggest gift they have to give the group is, and have them share. And then people get a chance to ask what their biggest question is or what their biggest need is, and have other people serve and solve for it. It's just a powerful process.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's so cool. So one of the other things I think is neat is, as we have continued to go in different directions, I mean, we're kind of in a similar industry, but definitely different directions, we've continued to hang out. And I love seeing the events, the lifestyle investor mindset, lifestyle, everything that you lead. Our wives are super close friends. And so we make intentional trips to come out and visit you guys. You guys make intentional trips to come out here to Austin and visit us. And it's really just been a fun friendship. I'm curious, what are your plans for the future? You got a company that's booming. You've got all kinds of demand. We're in a really funky market right now with crazy interest rates. Someone just quoted me 8.5%. I mean, yeah. This is just the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard of. It's hard to wrap your mind around it, but you've got a lot of sellers that they don't think that cap rates have changed and they can get the same price that they used to get. So I'm curious your thoughts on kind of where we are, where we're going, and how you're going to service that market.
Yeah, we got a loan approval today and he gave us the loan terms, but he didn't put the interest rate in. Thought that was funny. Usually it'll be like interest rate and like all this stuff. It was just we'll loan 66% loan to value. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So
did you figure out what it is? What's the interest rate?
I have the email in back. It happened.
That's so funny.
I've been in meetings since. So yeah. I was talking to another lender, same deal, different lender. And he's like, yeah, we're typically prime plus 0.5%. And he's like, prime's at 8.5 right now. I was like, well, shit. So you're saying 9%. He's like, yeah, that's where it's at. So yeah, it's been a really interesting past, really a year, you know, I guess eight, nine months it started hiking up. It's hard because a lot of people know what their park is worth long term, but they want to sell now, but there's just such a big gap. I mean, I was talking with an owner probably a month ago, and he's like, I want $1.2 million for it. And I was like, yeah, that we could have done that. Last year, literally at this time last year, easy, all day, every day. Now it's like, well, with interest rates where they're at, they're literally double. So it's been a crazy time. And I was talking to actually Jason, and he's like, oh, you buy them and then, you know, the rates are going to go down and then we'll refinance. I'm like, I'm not totally convinced these rates are going to go down. I mean, maybe a point or two, but I don't know. I'd be curious what you think if we'll see the... I think the threes are probably out of our lifetime, unfortunately, it would be my guess. But do you see a point where the next 5 to 8 years they get down to the 5-6% again? Or is this going to be a what are your thoughts?
Well, keep in mind, we even got in the twos, right? So I've got something locked up in the twos.
Oh, yeah. On the residential. I didn't see a commercial. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But yeah, I mean, I think rates are bound to come down. But are they going to come down to that? Probably not. They'll definitely come down, you know, a few points. I mean, the risk of tying things up at that high of an interest rate, like it's got to work. It's got to cash flow. You've got to have a 2 or 3 point spread between the cap rate and between and know the cap rate, like a real cap rate, and the interest rate. And if you don't have that, it's risky because you can't just bank on the fact that interest rates are going to come down. I mean, they will come down, but they might only come down 0.5 point over the next year, or maybe they come down a full point, but maybe that's it. And maybe that's not enough based on some of the underwriting. So I wouldn't ever do anything speculatively where, hey, I know I'm going to be able to refinance this. It doesn't work now, but maybe it'll work next year. It might not be, you know, till 4, 5, 6, 7 years before it gets to a place that many of us would consider reasonable.
Yep. And I think we'll see a lot. Somebody had sent me a TikTok video of a real estate investor or something. That basically the whole point was that there's like $2 trillion that is probably going to default in some way, shape or form. You know, guys that bought these parks 3 years ago and when their note comes due in a year or two, they're not going to be able to meet new interest rates and new debt service coverage. So I think it's a good time to kind of be patient, right? And just kind of sit, be patient and know that those deals will come over time.
100%. A ton of people use floating rates, bridge lending, so short-term debt with an anticipation that they could refinance at a reasonable rate for long-term debt. And that's just not going to pan out. And you're going to see a lot of people in every industry that are going to feel the pain of that. I mean, we're already starting to see it. I met with someone recently who invests on behalf of some of the largest family offices in the U.S., and he said that he, for the first time this month, started seeing some real opportunities, some real stress, and they're kind of getting in on some deals that are about to implode. So yeah, we'll keep seeing it over the next number of months, number of years, as the short-term debt comes due, right? So yeah, it'll be interesting. But at the same time, these environments are great opportunities. They provide more opportunity, in my opinion, for seller finance. Because if you can't get the bank loan, you get these sellers that recognize that you can't get the deal done without them being willing to carry the paper on it and at a much more reasonable rate. And by the way, that's also good for them because then they have some sort of income stream that they can count on with an asset that they wouldn't do it with unless they believed in that asset, right? So, you know, with the example of these mobile home parks, you and I have done a bunch of seller finance deals. No park owner's doing a seller finance deal with someone that they don't really know if they don't actually recognize that their park is worth that, right? So I like that. I like them having some skin in the game. And I think it's just great to not have, you know, it's a non-recourse loan. You don't have to get a bank involved. You can close much quicker. So I think it creates opportunity. And the defaults that will come, and I guarantee there will be defaults in virtually all asset classes, this is an opportunity for those that are poised and ready to pursue purchasing those, hopefully at a discount.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, we're really pushing for seller finance. You know, those price and terms will get a deal done, and we're really pushing on terms, being encouraging them to finance it. And if they want their, is the 1.2 million, well, hey, we'll do it if you finance us, and it works.
I love it. Well, Nick, this has been so much fun. I appreciate you sharing your story and what you're up to today. Where can our audience learn more about you and learn more about your company that's doing the wholesaling and assigning these contracts?
Yeah, great question. I think the easiest thing is just our website. It's elephantcp.com. Elephantcp, short for capitalpartners.com. So most of our available deals are up there and easy to contact us and inquire. You can, if you're a buyer, you know, just fill out the form and we'll put you on our buyers list. And whenever we get opportunities, we'll send them your way.
I love it. Well, I've done a bunch of deals with you guys. Can't recommend enough what you guys do and the time that you save. And just, I think you guys go the extra mile. You know, you guys don't just assign it. You do all this diligence, all this homework, gather all this information to make sure that you're actually getting it at a good price and you're handing it off in a really good situation and saving the prospective buyer, in many instances, me and my team, tremendous amount of time, energy, and effort. So well done. And I just want to wrap up this episode the way I wrap up every week. And that's with a question to you as the audience. And my question is similar every single week, but let me say it again this week. What is one step that you can take today to move towards financial freedom and really living a life that you truly desire, one that's on your terms? So not a life by default like most people live, but truly a life by design. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Lifestyle Investor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe so future episodes are automatically downloaded directly to your device. You can also leave an honest rating and review over on iTunes. Not only do I read every single one, but it also helps me understand what content matters the most to our audience. And if you can think of one or two people who would benefit from this episode, would you mind sharing it with them right now? Who knows? Maybe they'll buy you something nice when they make their first million. If you would like access to today's show notes, including links to all resources mentioned, visit www.lifestyleinvestor.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next week for another episode of The Lifestyle Investor.
This podcast is being made available exclusively to financially sophisticated, high net worth individuals capable of evaluating the merits and risks of investments. The material presented in this podcast is not intended to be investment advice or to recommend the purchase or sale of any security, nor is it intended to be legal, accounting, or tax advice. You should consult with your legal, tax, or financial advisor in connection with any material discussed on this podcast. Past performance is not indicative nor a guarantee of future results. Certain materials discussed on this podcast may have been prepared by third parties, which have been obtained from sources that we believe to be accurate and current. However, we make no representation or warranty as to the accuracy, completeness, or currency of such materials.